The MPs are to hold an emergency debate today as pressure grows for the legislation on abortion law here to be changed. The Labour MP, Stella Creasy, who proposed the debate last night, says it is wrong that Northern Ireland remains out of step with the rest of the UK. And Stella Creasy is with us now. Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning. Is it not for locally elected people to decide what is right for Northern Ireland?
Yes, absolutely. But one of the problems right now is that nobody in Northern Ireland can make any form of modern abortion legislation without us acting in the UK Parliament to repeal the 150-year-old piece of legislation that governs all abortion law across both England, Wales and Northern Ireland. It's called the Offences Against the Person Act, and it was written in 1861, and it puts abortion alongside using gunpowder to blow up a building and cause somebody to die, homicide and something it calls child stealing. So we think it's absolutely right that we look at the abortion legislation that was set in Westminster and ask whether it is fit for purpose. We don't think it's fit for purpose. By repealing it, every single nation can then set its own modern abortion laws. And that will be up to whether it's the people in Northern Ireland or indeed in England, where it will affect my constituents to have modern abortion laws, for those laws to be set theirs by those people.
How will it affect your constituents can have an abortion if they want?
Well, actually, one of the challenges, especially since the 1967 Act, bear in mind that 67 Act didn't legalise abortion in England and Wales. It simply gave exemptions. And I don't think it's right in that in 2018 that we say that we don't trust women to make choices about their own body and therefore risk them being forced to continue an unwanted pregnancy. But also since 1967, the problem isn't just that paternalistic attitude. Look, pills have been invented, misoprostol, and indeed we know that it's not just the 700 women who've travelled from Northern Ireland in the last year to England to seek an abortion that need support at home. It's also the thousands of women who are buying pills illegally online. And there are women in England and Wales doing this too, because at the moment they have to go and they have to go and see several doctors. And certainly in Northern Ireland, of course, it's illegal for them to purchase these drugs at all. But even in England, it's illegal for them to purchase them. Now, the risk is that they might buy pills that are not medically appropriate. They're not under medical supervision. If something goes wrong and they seek medical help, well, then they're liable to prosecution.
How do you know, Stella, what Northern Irish women want?
Well, we know from the opinion polls, we know from the numbers of women accessing these services online, we know from the numbers of women travelling that there is a demand. We need to be clear, look, stopping abortion in Northern Ireland doesn't...
There's a demand for anything, but how do you know what the majority in Northern Ireland want?
Well, because we know from things like the Life and Times survey that across all different religious backgrounds, political backgrounds, ages, ethnicities, people would like to see abortion being treated as a medical rather than criminal matter. And I think it's really important that I stress again, look, this is not about writing a particular law for Northern Ireland, but it is about repealing a piece of legislation that has stopped that conversation and stopped those laws being crafted in a way by Northern Irish people that suits them.
So I'm sorry that I don't understand, but I'm guessing that if I don't understand, maybe some other people don't either. So this law that you're wanting changed, how will that actually affect what we do in Northern Ireland?
Well, because
so start
right
off with
now,
that law. What does that
well,
law
right now,
stop
so,
us doing?
Say, the Offences Against the Person Act makes procuring an abortion, whether the person who procures it or the person who has it, a criminal offence. That's why in Northern Ireland at the moment, if you are raped and you become pregnant as a result and seek a termination, you could face a longer prison sentence than your attacker. That's why we have live cases. So the idea that this is a theoretical thing just doesn't make any sense. We have live cases where you have a mother of a 15-year-old girl who was in a coercive relationship, became pregnant. Her mother bought her abortion pills online, misoprostol, and is now facing prosecution. A young woman has a criminal sentence for life because her flatmates reported her for having taken misoprostol. So the reason why they are prosecuted is because this criminal legislation, which is 150 years old, lies at the heart of access to abortion.
Of course, what you have omitted to reference today when you talk about people is the largest political party in Northern Ireland, the DUP, who are fundamentally against what you're proposing. The Democratic Unionist Party, who do stand in front of the people of Northern Ireland and get a huge mandate.
Well, actually, I'm listening and I'm hearing the debate in Northern Ireland. And I've written to every MLA. Just because the Assembly isn't sitting doesn't mean that I don't have respect for representatives, as I am a representative myself. I've written to every Member of Parliament, including the DUP Members of Parliament, to ask them to engage in this debate about whether OPA, which is Offence Against Person Act, is fit for purpose. But I understand, obviously, that there are MLAs like Simon Hamilton today who were saying, well, actually, we do need to have a debate about this, because when abortion isn't even possible for women in Northern Ireland in cases of incest or rape or fatal fetal abnormality. And just think about that one for a moment. That is somebody who's had the most tragic, heartbreaking diagnosis that their child will not live when it is born, who has to travel in a lonely, degrading experience overseas to receive treatment. You know, stopping abortion in Northern Ireland doesn't stop abortion taking place or Northern Irish women seeking abortions. It simply makes it a degrading and inhumane experience for them, or it puts them at risk of making choices like buying pills online that could put them at risk in terms of their safety. So if you want women in Northern Ireland to be safe, then you need to have a safe and medically led approach to how they can manage when their bodies are pregnant and it's not something that's appropriate for them.
And those DUP MPs who you wrote to, have any of them written back?
Oh, yes. And look, I'm happy to...
Have any of them supported abortion when they've written back?
So I haven't seen anyone from the DUP in Westminster, no, but I'm absolutely committed to talking and working. This is not a partisan issue for me. Abortion is a matter of conscience.
Sure, but when you said, yes, for any of the DUP MLAs or MPs, have any of them written back supporting abortion?
I've certainly seen unionist MLAs like Doug Beattie talking about the importance of this. And I'm saying also, I'm listening to people like Simon Hamilton saying that they do need to have the debate. And what I'm saying is, well, look, there's no point in you having that debate in Northern Ireland if we don't repeal this piece of legislation that right now frames how you have to have it, that the UK has set out, but Northern Ireland can't change on its own.
Okay. So for clarity, Stella, and in the interest of being fair to the DUP, you've written to many members of the DUP, you say, and none of them have written back supporting abortion.
No, and I wouldn't pretend.
And that's the biggest political party in Northern Ireland.
But what I am hearing from Northern Ireland and from talking to campaigners and looking at those opinion polls and working with people on the ground is that there is a willingness to have this debate and a recognition that this piece of legislation that I'm talking about repealing, and remember, it also affects my constituents, so this is not just about Northern Ireland, is getting in the way of being able to do that and say, what is it that Northern Ireland wants in 2018?
Did the last Labour government fail Northern Ireland women?
In what particular way?
Well, there was direct rule under Labour, under Tony Blair, from 2002 and 2007. Why didn't Labour change the law?
Look, I was elected in 2010, so I can only account for what has happened in Parliament since 2010.
But my question is, therefore, did the last Labour government betray women?
Well, you're asking me to comment on a situation I wasn't around in to understand why decisions were made, and I don't think that's fair. Well, my opinion is that it's not fair to comment on something when you weren't there. You know, I know that sounds old-fashioned and perhaps unusual for a politician to think they maybe ought to know what they're talking about.
It sounds like it's stuck in an obvious question, which is...
No, I'm sorry.
We didn't need to be in the First or Second World War to have an opinion on what happened. So Labour were in power. There was direct rule,
right.
and Tony Blair did nothing. This is not
a partisan issue. I don't know. I wasn't around for the conversations, whether Mo Molum led them, whether Tony Blair led them.
Were you part of the Labour Party then?
Yes, but I was a teenager. I mean, I'm 41, and I'm very, you know, I'm told by my staff that I'm no longer a young chicken, so that's fine. But what I am saying to you is that there's a debate now, there's a recognition now, especially with the result in Ireland itself with that referendum overwhelming, that the time has come to look again at why this 150-year-old piece of legislation is stopping Northern Ireland having abortion laws that make sense for the Northern Irish public in 2018. And what I'm trying to do from Westminster is facilitate that debate.
Well, you say, Stella, that this is not a partisan issue, although your critics might suggest that what you're trying to do is unravel the confidence and supply agreement between the DUP and the Tory party, and therefore bring down the government, actually. Partisan.
I've listened to Theresa May herself, who said that the confidence and supply arrangement was nothing to do with social issues. And as I say, because this is not a party political issue, I think most people would see abortion as a matter of conscience. Look, whatever argument people want to make against myself, that's, I'm not the important person here. The important people here are the men and women of Northern Ireland who are asking for change and right now not being heard. And one of the reasons they can't be heard is because you don't have an assembly, but also because of some of those deals that are being done in Westminster. And I said very clearly yesterday, nobody should be held hostage, either by Brexit or the fact that we have a hung parliament or the fact those talks have stalled when it comes to human rights. Remember, the United Nations itself has said that the British government is breaking the rules on human rights by not addressing this situation. And indeed, remember, the Good Friday Agreement did retain responsibility for human rights at the UK level. So even if devolution were in place, we would not be absolved of our human rights responsibilities to look at this issue and to ask whether this UK legislation is getting in the way of the rights of people in Northern Ireland.
I'm slightly confused when you bring up that Theresa May has said that social issues should not be included in the Northern Ireland arrangement, because of course you will be well aware of the warning shots that senior members of the DUP have sent to the government around this.
I can only go on what Theresa May, you would have to ask Theresa May herself, wouldn't you? I can only go on what she has said and what she's told.
You must be aware of the power the DUP currently has with the Conservative Party.
I think we're all very aware of that and very aware of the funding that comes with that.
So what do you think, Stella,
but my
would
responsibility,
happen? What do you think would happen, therefore?
I'm loving this because you're asking me to preempt and guess what happened under the last Labour government when I was a teenager, and also to put myself in the mind and shoes of Theresa May. I am neither of those people.
Well.
I'm simply a backbench Labour cooperative
MP.
Simply
a backbench Labour MP.
And cooperative. Please don't forget the cooperative party,
sure,
because I'm very proud to be cooperative as well.
Simply a backbench Labour MP.
With a track record of campaigning on women's rights. I think
okay.
that even my detractors would give me that.
Sure.
So
well, of course, some women are against
rights.
Abortion. You're loading this, aren't you? When you talk about women's rights, there are many women, certainly throughout your constituency and indeed here in Northern Ireland, who feel that they are as passionate about women's rights as you are, and they are against abortion. But you position yourself as this backbench MP without a knowledge or an understanding of what it would actually do to the Tory party if the DUP withdrew their support for them. And surely you cannot talk about this discussion in Northern Ireland without passing commentary on what would happen to the stability of Northern Ireland if the DUP were forced into a situation where they had to withdraw their support for the Tory party. This is what this is about, isn't it?
I don't mean to tell you how to do your job, but I don't get to go to the 1922 committee because I'm not a Conservative MP. So I can't tell you what the mood of the Conservative Party is about its relationship with the DUP. What I can tell you is that there is support across Parliament for a recognition that the situation in Northern Ireland and indeed around abortion law generally is unsustainable. So the question is, what do we do to have modern abortion legislation? And that's what this debate is about. You're asking me to speculate on how the Conservatives have done this deal with the DUP. For many of us, obviously, I wish my constituents had quite the funding that the DUP has been able to secure, because austerity has completely ripped my community apart. But I also recognise that women in my community need modern abortion legislation. So do I, as a backbench Labour MP, sit it out and wait until the next election, or do we get stuck into trying to make change happen?
Stella Creasy, thank you very much indeed. Nice to talk to you this morning. Listening to that, the commentator, former DUP MLA, Nelson McCausland. What do you make of that, Nelson? Morning.
Good morning, Stephen. I thought it was very interesting. There were many things that Stella Creasy said, and many things she didn't say, which took my attention. The thing that did strike me most of all, I think, was that it was something she didn't say. I couldn't recall, maybe I missed it, maybe she did it once, but certainly it wasn't very obvious. I think I'm right in saying she didn't mention at all the word baby. Because when there is an abortion, there are two lives involved. Both lives matter. And in this case, she went through about 15 minutes without ever once mentioning the word baby or the term unborn child. And that is quite an incredible thing, that someone could speak for 15 minutes and never mention one of the people who is right at the heart of the issue. And I think that says something very, very worrying and for me quite shocking about the position that Stella Creasy adopts. And the other thing that...
Well, the position, Nelson, that Stella Creasy is adopting is to give a woman the right to decide what happens inside her own body.
Yeah. The difficulty here is, of course, that it isn't quite as simple as that. And we hear that point often made. We saw the posters, My Body, My Rights. We see posters, in fact, they had them in Belfast the other week at a pro-abortion rally, where one woman was carrying a poster that said, My Uterus, My Rules. It's another way of putting the same thing. My Body, My Rights, My Rules. The phrase that's missing is the one that was missing from what Stella Creasy said. Where does that woman speak about my baby? Now, the other thing that struck me very forcibly there in terms of what Stella Creasy said was when she started to talk about her constituents and their needs. The 1967 Abortion Act in Britain, and it's worth remembering that in that period between 67 and now, there have been 8.7, nearly 9 million recorded abortions. That's actually five times the population of Northern Ireland. But she's talking about a situation there in her constituency where the 67 Act applies. She then says she needs to do something for the benefit of her constituents. So, in other words, she wants to see the law changed. Now, she wants to see it liberalised? Does she want to see it restricted? She didn't tell us that. She also possibly, and I can only speculate on this, and others will speculate as well, but could it be just that this talk about the rest of the United Kingdom is simply a cover, a ruse, if you like, to get round the issue that abortion law in Northern Ireland is a devolved matter. And therefore, it should be left to Northern Ireland. And as you rightly pointed out, Stephen, when there were opportunities before under direct rule to deal with this issue, it didn't happen.
But you talk about...
There's a real pressure on at the moment to almost just force this over the line without due consideration.
Well, you talk about devolved matters, and of course... The clue is in the description, devolved matters. There's nobody here anymore. There is no government.
Indeed.
There's nobody to handle it.
Indeed.
So some people might argue, Nelson, that we can continue to be in la-la land of talking about local government making local decisions. They're gone. They can't make any local decisions. They can't work with each other. They spend every day now telling the public why they disagree with each other. It is over for the moment.
Well, the situation in Northern Ireland is maybe not quite as you portray it there.
Can you tell me? Well, just on that point, can you point out to me one example in the last few months where the DUP or Sinn Féin have told the public they agree on anything?
The situation is that we have a form of devolution in Northern Ireland, which has in it the capacity built into it, that capacity for one party to collapse devolution and to ensure that devolution is not restored. And Sinn Féin have exploited that.
So we are where we are.
We are where we are indeed. But the point I'm making is this. In all of this discussion, let's remember that it is a matter that should be left to the people of Northern Ireland. Theresa May has said that, others have noted that, and I suspect that others in other parts of the United Kingdom where there are devolved governments will be cautious and nervous because you could start going down a road where somehow or other the UK government then overrode devolved decisions. One of the points that Stella Creasy made there was that even if there was devolution in Northern Ireland, this is a matter really about human rights, in her view, although only some rights, but it's therefore a matter which should really be dealt with at Westminster. They want to withdraw, Shane Lowe's want to withdraw from Northern Ireland, the right that was devolved to Northern Ireland, and whether there was an assembly there or not, I suspect they might well take that view.
If this is truly, Nelson, about what the people of Northern Ireland think about this matter, would you support a referendum?
I'm not generally in favour of referenda. Now, in my lifetime, we've had a few, but...
Did you welcome the Brexit result?
Sorry?
Did you welcome the Brexit result?
Well, I welcomed the Brexit result indeed, because I voted against joining the European project 40-odd years ago, and I voted to leave it on this occasion. That's a constitutional matter. It seems to be that that's how these things are dealt with. But basically, I do not think it is good for any society to go down that road where you have referendum after referendum after referendum. We can look at the way in which the Brexit decision was taken, how divisive that has been. We can look at the referendum in Scotland on independence and how deeply divisive and hurtful that was in Scotland.
And we can look at, with the lack of a referendum, how divisive...
I think the referendum are not the best way to do it.
But you can also look at how divisive just talking about abortion is. And surely a referendum in Northern Ireland would establish what the people actually think. So no more speculation.
I think people here...
What are you afraid of?
I'm not afraid of anything. I simply take the view that I think that referenda are not the best way to deal with these or any other issues. It should be the very rare exception, such as the Brexit constitutional issue.
Finally, Nelson, do you think the DUP would bring down the government over this issue? Because, of course, some commentators have said if the DUP's tested in this, they will blink because the last thing they want is Corbyn in government.
I think that is a situation that at the moment looks very much that will not arise, because Theresa May has been very clear that the position of her government is that this is a matter for the people of Northern Ireland. The fact of the matter is that since 1967, there are 100,000 people alive today in Northern Ireland because of our laws being different from those in GB. We now have a situation in GB where one-fifth of pregnancies, one-fifth, one in every five, are ended with an abortion. There are all sorts of issues that I would like to see discussed and opened up in a calm and considerate and I think compassionate
and
way.
And you judge those one-fifth of women who have got abortions as being people who have done something wrong, do you?
It's not for me to judge anyone.
But you're quoting the statistic. You're quoting the 20%.
I'm simply saying here is a fact.
Yes, and the fact
and
is...
There is no harm in putting out that fact.
But Nelson,
judging anyone. I'll tell you what...
But though, Nelson, the fact is those women have, because they've had the choice, one-fifth, a significant proportion, it's not 1 or 2%, because they've had the choice, the ability to make a choice, they've taken the choice. So 20% of women who have been pregnant have decided that they wanted an abortion, and you want to stop them having that choice.
No, what I would say is this. The person who introduced the 1967 Act in Britain was Lord Steele, David Steele. On the 40th anniversary, David Steele said there have been too many abortions. There are too many repeated abortions. He says we never anticipated that this is what it would be. And that issue about having more information, more conversation, more consideration. There are lots of things I would like to see done.
Another man you quote about women making a choice.
Well, to conceive a child, there are two people involved. There is a man and a woman. I think a lot of the arguments and some of the slogans that have been used about trust women, you could equally go to another issue and say trust men. Trust men in regard to perhaps something that men do. And we don't say that. Because the fact of the matter is, we all get things wrong. We all make mistakes. We all at times do things that are wrong. That's foreign human nature. And I think we need to get away from some of those very facile slogans and actually bear in mind there are two lives here involved, a mother and her baby, and we need to find the best outcome for both.
Nelson McCausland, thank you very much indeed. Mervyn in Hollywood. Morning, Mervyn.
Can you hear me, Stephen?
Yes. Morning.
I can hardly hear you. But anyway, I don't think the people of Northern Ireland have any right whatsoever to tell a young lady or any woman at all who has been raped, brutally raped, finds herself pregnant a month or two later, than for us to tell her she must carry that jail. The situation is the woman might not want it. I can't see where we get the rights to tell a woman who has been raped and to carry on that jail and perhaps even to look after it. To me, no, that's just too much.
Well, now you're talking, and you know where this discussion goes, you're talking about the woman's rights, and Nelson McCausland would say, let's also talk about that child's rights.
Yes, that's absolutely right, and he's up. Nelson McCausland's right.
Whether the child is a result of rape or not, is that child not entitled to have their life protected?
Yes, Stephen, I see that. I see that, but we are not carrying it. There's only one woman, one young girl's carrying it. Not us, not you, not me, not anybody else. So I'm questioning whether we have the right to do that. Because surely that the situation where that child carries on is up to the woman. Not me and you or anybody else.